Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to Come Along Pond, a Doctor Who discussion podcast with your two best friends, Elliot
and Damla. Oh, break from the norm there.
Wow. do you know what? I like to be a little bit exotic and a little bit different sometimes because I'm special. But apart from that, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, thank you. Nice to see you as always. I'm excited. Obviously.
I'm actually screaming. I'm actually crying. I'm actually throwing up low-key. Because if you can read the title, you know we have a really special guest today. That is Crystal D. I mean, listen, we're both so excited. But before we go into any of that, Elliot, give it to me. What have we got?
Well, as per usual, we do have three emails. First of all, though, before I ask any of the questions that may or may not be in these emails, I don't know, I don't proofread them. I read them when they first come in, when I'm screen grabbing them. It's a wild card, yeah. Maybe. I do have a question for you though.
Yeah, go on.
Which I feel like normally I would just ask you in our private lives, but also, you know, I feel like the listeners want and deserve to know. Are you or are you not now planning to go to any cinema in your local vicinity that will be screening the Eras Tour with themed popcorn buckets and drink cups?
Well, do you want to know something really sad, Elliot? Because, of course, you are only but a casual, not fan even, you're just an observer and appreciator of Blondie. The Eras Tour concert is only being screened in cinemas in North America because she hates us.
Well, I think that's a travesty and more reason to not listen to her or her terrible management decisions. awful.
It's awful. No, it's really bad.
You never know, it might come here.
It will. I have a feeling they're going to do a version for the international crew, which is going to Europe, and they're going to record a new version, I have a feeling. I don't know.
It would be an odd waste of money.
It would be an odd waste of money, but you know what? It's fine, because I'm going to see her twice next year, so it's fine.
Yeah, but we'll catch it in the cinema if you get the chance.
Absolutely, I'll do a whole dedicated episode.
With themed popcorn tin and cup.
Don't worry. We will be talking about Taylor Swift very soon, I'm sure.
But yeah, just wanted to know. But of course, only in North America, so that makes perfect sense. I mean, it doesn't, but you know what I mean. It makes perfect sense as to why I've not heard you talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But thank you for asking. I appreciate it. But yeah, no. All I'm going to say is the listeners, we hear you. It's coming. We hear you. We see the tags on TikTok. We hear you. And we also hear you in three mails.
And maybe one day we'll get to talk about something that I'm interested in. Anyway, let's go. So the first email goes as follows. It says, hello, Damla and Elliot. Hello, I just wanted to let you know how much fun I've had listening to the pod. After listening to your first episode, me and my partner Faith have started watching the entire show again. We watch an episode to tell each other our most Doctor Who moments, favourite quotes, give it a ranking out of 10, keeping it legally distinct from yours. That's good, because I was on your back then. So, and then listen to your episode for a slightly different opinion to ours. It's become a weekly ritual of ours and is a fun way for us to watch the show together for the first time. I have a sort of question for you. In the spin-off episode, you said you'd be interested in a Martha Jones spin-off, but not necessarily the Year of Martha. What do you think of Smith and Jones, Bounty Hunters, following Martha and Mickey post the 10th Doctor's goodbye with them both? I'd love to know what you think. I mean, I'd come in quickly and just say nothing with Noel Clarke in it will ever get me to watch it. So, you know, pretty staunch on that. Good in concept, terrible execution.
Yeah, I think, do you know what? I'm actually not completely opposed to recasting people. That's something I think, if it's done correctly and done in the right way, can be really, really good. I can't think of an example off the top of my head.
Martha Jones, Bounty Hunter. What happened to Mickey Smith? Mickey Smith died on the way back to his home planet. Who cares? He tripped on a rock and fell down some stairs.
And we don't. And we just don't want that man involved, obviously. Yes. We, you know, yeah. So it would be cool if they recast.
Yeah. And it's not me having a go at you, Jack. You might not know, but that's just, you know, just our feelings on the matter. Nothing with Noel Clarke in it, please. But good pitch. Get rid of Noel Clarke. I think you're on to a winner. Thank you for giving me yet another reason to watch the world's best show, Jack and Faith. Thank you, Jack and Faith. Don't think we've ever had a couple email in. Appreciate it.
I love that so much, though. I need more couples to email in, please. Please and thank you.
And we have another email here that goes as follows. Hey, party people. I've just started listening to your pod after seeing a few clips on TikTok. I'm loving it so far, and it's convinced me to do another New Who rewatch, so I can watch alongside you.
Cute.
I was 13 when New Who started, and like you, I'm a huge RTD fan. Tennant is my doctor. When he left, I was devastated, and when Moffat and Smith took over, I just couldn't warm to them. It wasn't until Capaldi that I started to enjoy the era, but I did rewatch mid-2020 all of New Who, and really came to appreciate the Moffat era a lot more. I think it stands up really, really well, especially Series 8 and 10. Okay, bud. I must admit, I get a little something to talk negatively about Capaldi's era, just because, honestly, I think it's one of the best of the show, hoping to hear if you've softened up a bit when you get to those episodes. Anyway, thanks for an enjoyable pod, Calvin. We don't hate Capaldi. Damla hasn't seen it since Broadcast.
So I've rewatched some episodes since Broadcast, some. Mostly stuff with Bill. I don't hate Capaldi. Can we just get the record straight here? I love that man. I absolutely love them, especially the actor. I love him. He's such a cozy person. I love him. Yeah. And he's an incredible actor. I just don't like Series 8. It's quite simple, but I have a feeling, I genuinely have a feeling, because of the nature of this podcast, when we rewatch it, I think I'm actually going to have a newfound love for the 12th Doctor. I have a feeling, because the show always knows how to suck me back in. So we'll see.
And of course, you know, there's lots of things that we don't like or enjoy as much that sometimes just talking about makes us enjoy.
And this isn't me aiming it at you, Calvin, at all. But I also feel like people forget that, like, so it, just because you adore and love something doesn't mean you always love it. Like I don't know, Taylor Swift, who we just mentioned. Adore the woman. One of my favourite people on the planet. She's also a billionaire and her jet is a problem. Do you know what I mean? Like, stuff like that. There's nuance. There's nuance.
And we also hope we're never, you know, we are quite jovial and we do like to joke about what we do and don't like, and, you know, because it's fun and we're kind of having fun, but, you know, we're never here to form other people's opinions. People like what they like. I'm, you know, acutely aware that sort of 10 and 11 are probably the two most popular things in the whole show. So my dislike of 11 is quite, you know, odd, but I unfortunately have a USB microphone and a loud voice, so I just get to shout about it on the internet.
Yeah, as you should. As you should.
But thank you. Thank you for emailing in.
Thank you.
And our final email goes as follows. Hey.
Hey. Whoa. Hi.
Just want to send a message. So your podcast has kept me sane for the last few months. Well, you'll be the first. Whilst I've been in and out of hospital having surgery and eternally stuck in my flat. Well, I hope you're okay. Obviously, you don't need to disclose what the surgery is, but I hope you're feeling okay. First found you through your TikTok, and the podcast is such a comforting nostalgia journey, which has made up for having to cancel summer plans and holidays. Again, awful. Hope you're feeling okay. I was so relieved to hear your opinions on Love and Monsters were similar to mine. I was so sick of hearing all the diehard hate around an episode which serves undiluted, messy fun every time, i.e. Mr. Skinner on the drums in his knitted vest, Ursula as a slab, and Peter Kay in his little black bikini briefs. I am also L-O-V-I-N-G, loving Martha is finally getting the recognition she absolutely deserves. Buzzing to hear your thoughts on my favourite series next. Science in the Library, Forest of the Dead, Midnight. Ah, molto bene. Thanks once again for keeping me sane. My boyfriend is not a Doctor Who fan, and neither are any of my friends, so it's good to hear like-minded people like you two. And that is from Jemima. Thank you, Jemima.
Jemima, first of all, love your name, because it reminds me of Jemima Puddle Duck, because I love that book. And that is a compliment, because she's an icon. Second of all, yes, I'm excited to talk about these episodes. And third of all, I hope you're doing really, really well. And we are both sending you so much love, speedy recovery, and appreciation. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Take care, Jemima. It was lovely to hear from you.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you so much, everybody who emailed in. Thank you for joining us in Three Mail Corner. Just to say, we're so, so excited to start our chat with Crystal D to talk about the fires of Pompeii. I just need to let you know, as a heads up, we did encounter some problems with Crystal's audio just towards the end of the episode, maybe the last 15 minutes or so. The audio does start to glitch a little. We've done our best to try and fix it, make it more listenable to, but you can understand what Crystal's saying, and we really appreciate, you know, your patience of putting up with it, but we didn't want to lose Crystal as a guest, because it was really a great chat. We had a brilliant, brilliant time. So, yeah, hope you enjoy the episode. And Damla, I don't know about you, but it's getting hot in here.
It's getting really hot. I'm boiling.
Sweaty, molten lava mess.
And we can't even roll the credits because they've melted.
Oh, damn. Bake credits.
Whoosh.
Roll credits.
Roll credits.
As you may have noticed from up top and our silly little joke, today we are talking about The Fires of Pompeii. It was broadcast on the 12th of April 2008, directed by Colin Teague and written by James Moran. Hello, everybody.
It's a really special record today because we have... You know Crystal. Come on. You know Crystal. If you don't, you're a bloody fool. Crystal, introduce yourself to the people.
Hello. So I'm Crystal, and Crystal D, I guess. It always seems really weird to say my name in full like that, because when I'm at conventions, people go, "Are you Crystal D?" Yes. So yes, some of you may recognise me from such programmes as Doctor Who the Fan Show and Five Who Fans.
Hey.
So yay. Thank you for having me.
No, honestly, I mean, we've already said this. I've said it about, what, six times now? Like, we really appreciate you coming on. It's just, you know what? It's going to be hot girl chats, as always. It's going to be a time, and we've got a really fun episode to talk about. So, everyone, again, like I always say, you know, grab a snack. Grab your drink of choice.
Stay hydrated.
And buckle in. Stay hydrated, yes. So, you know, before we get into the episode... Guys, I have a question for you both. Because I know what the episode's about. I know what Google thinks it's about. I know what IMDb thinks it's about. Hell, I know what that market guy thinks it's about in the episode. Crystal, let's go to you first. What do you think the episode's about?
Massive lava monsters live in a mountain and they get blown up.
Stunning.
Yeah.
Perfection.
Yeah.
And there's loads of other stuff, obviously.
Yes, there is.
That happens.
But Elliot, can you top that? I don't think you could top that.
No, I don't think I can. I'll go now. I think the episode's about how only the most annoying people you know do philosophy.
Yeah, well, that's... I mean, tea. That's tea.
Love that.
That is tea.
Demla, what do you think it's about? Come on.
I'll tell you what it's about. It's about how you shouldn't ignore a skin rash. Any rash. especially if it's looking a little bit rock-like. Anywho, I mean, okay, first things first. First thing I want to say right up top, right at the front, right at the start. It's just Doctor Who All-Stars, isn't it, this episode?
It's the 12th Doctor himself, but not himself, but also himself, maybe? I kind of forgot how that goes. But kind of himself, sort of. He's here. Either way, it's Peter Capaldi. He's here. And Karen Gillan. Sorry. Yeah.
Queen Karen Gillan. Honestly, it's so funny to me. Like, every time I watch it, I always forget, especially that she's in it. Then when she pops up, I'm like, oh, there you are. And she's a baby. She's a little baby in this.
I love how they brought them back, though.
Me too.
And I think, like, it sort of raises this question of, like, what other guest stars or, like, kind of small, you know, people who've done, like, small parts, what other guest stars could we get back in future?
Exactly.
As the Doctor or a companion. Anything could happen.
I think, no, you're so right. And it's like, you know, the thing, I mean, this is probably, I was going to say it later, but I'll say it now because we never do things in order, but I think the way this was brought back later on with, you know, obviously it was, you know, Capaldi was played the Doctor, and then there was the whole thing of like, how are they going to address the fact that he was in the show before? And it was in the two-parter in series 9. Forgive me, I forget the names of the episodes, but
is it Heaven Sent Them,
you know,
Hell Bent? Is it that one? I don't know.
No. It's when they're in the town. The town, and it's like a little, I'm not even explaining it very well, but it's
face,
when
Face the Raven.
Anyway, 12 says.
There's towns abundant, and also everything in series 9 is a two-parter, so I don't know.
This is true.
Yeah.
But 12 basically says that this fate is a reminder that of a choice he made one day. And he's the Doctor and he saves people. And I think I just love that because it could have easily been a bit naff the way they explained it. And I think it was perfect because what I was at the end of this episode, and I think what I love about the message of this episode is that there are rules, but they are also there to be partially broken. Obviously, we don't want to split realities apart or anything, but I think, you know, the messages that were brought up in this were very, very important. And I think it was about time that they were brought up, you know, of, yeah, okay, there's fixed points in time, but we need to saving people is the goal here. And it's always important to look at the bigger picture, essentially.
But what's so interesting is I feel like series 4 is when the 10th Doctor starts to go down this path of being, you know, the Time Lord victorious.
Yes.
What does he say? Yeah, it's like, where he starts, you know, because obviously as we get into the specials, he's completely ruined.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he's starting to get quite dark as a character. And obviously Donna comes in and really helps him. And, you know, when she comes on board, he says, she says, sometimes I think you need someone. Actually, it's in the Christmas episode when they're passing.
Yes.
She says, you know, sometimes I think you need someone. And then they come back to that line after that moment and they get into the TARDIS and she says, thank you. She's the one who kicks up a fuss and she's like, you've got to save somebody, please. Obviously he does it. And then she's like, thank you. And then he's like, yes, you're right. Sometimes I think I need someone. And it's just like such a lovely moment. And their relationship is so balanced. I feel like sometimes with doctors, you know, sort of a doctor and companion relationship, there can be one person who has slightly more dominance or kind of like leads things more. Whereas I feel like Donna and the Doctor are really, they're equals, aren't they?
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
They balance each other out. So she kind of keeps him in check and then all of the sad things happen at the end of series 4 and then he's on his own and then he's just like, left to his own devices, it's not good.
I felt like this episode works really well hand in hand with like Waters of Mars. You could watch them sort of back to back as basically polar opposites of the same story with worse things happening.
Like, 100%. Yeah. 100%.
And Waters of Mars is so good. Spoiler, but brilliant.
Save it.
Save it. I also really quickly wouldn't be doing my very boring job on the show if I didn't mention that, of course, Colin Baker was in Ark of Infinity as Commander Maxil and then was the Doctor. It's happened before. It's my obligatory Classic Who reference for everybody.
And the lady from Smith and Jones, who plays the old lady who sucks the blood with the straw, what's her name?
Oh yeah, the plasmavore, isn't it?
Anne Reed.
Yes.
Who's in Years and Years. She is in one of the Sylvester McCoy episodes.
Ooh. That's one I've seen.
It's going to bug me now.
Yeah, life research.
I have Google.
Yes.
life research. So she was in The Curse of Fenric.
Oh, is she in Curse of Fenric?
Curse of Fenric.
I mean, I'm not... I mean, obviously she's got to open in front of you. I just don't remember her being in Curse of Fenric. Yeah.
I'd forgotten about that, and then I saw some promo pictures. I was looking for some pictures from Sylvester McCoy's era the other day, and then she popped up, and I was like, oh, I forgot she was
Well, that's
there.
A fun fact.
And another fun fact is I have seen her twice in public in the last few months.
Really?
On the way to the supermarket, hailing a black cab.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, there she is. I was like, oh, hello. And next time, because it's happened twice now, next time it happens, I think I'm going to go up to her.
Do it. Yeah. Do it.
And I'm just going to say, just want to say, you were absolutely fantastic. And you were fantastic in Years and Years. And fantastic in Doctor Who. And fantastic in...
Because we were talking about because she's in Last Tango in Halifax, where she's dating Derek
Last
Jacobi,
Tango in Halifax.
But
that's
also Sacha Dhawan's in it, so it's all
happening. It's all happening. So yes, so next time.
Yeah. But yeah, she seems lovely. I'm sure she'd appreciate it. Yeah,
I do love it though, where they're with the Doctor Who cast, especially. There's just this never-ending backlog of stuff that half of them have been in together. And it's just part of the joke. It's great.
It's British television, really, isn't it? It's like, I feel like British actors, especially actors who appear a lot on the BBC, they do the rounds. They've all done a Casualty. They've all done a Doctor Who. They've all done a Holby City.
And it's nice. Exactly. Yeah, it's nice when they get that chance. Because Freema Agyeman's in Doomsday and Army of Ghosts as Martha's cousin.
Yeah. It's all... I love how they explain that one as well.
Yeah, it's her cousin.
That one's fun. That's a fun explanation. Not as good as this one. I feel like, again, this one is pretty nice, the way it's all kind of circling back.
A bit more dramatic.
We love Adeola. The cousin Adeola. Love her.
Yeah, I couldn't remember her name.
Icon.
I also think for a presumably very small 2008 BBC budget, that actually I think Ancient Rome looks quite good, in my opinion. Like it looks quite nice.
Yeah, really. I would agree with that.
I have no idea where they shot it, but it looks good.
Probably somewhere in Wales, most likely. But...
Yeah, probably.
Hey, look, I like Wales. I'm not hating. I'm not a hater.
I live there. It's fine. It's fine. So you like.
Yeah, there you go. I've got your approval. but I think especially the kind of everything that was shot outside, or if it was outside, I don't know. That stuff looks pretty good.
All of the market stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's really good, isn't it? All of the market stuff. The only thing that I don't understand is in, you know, in their house, the family.
Mm. Yeah.
People just walk in. Like, there's not really like a doorbell. Yeah. People just arrive. Was it like that in ancient Rome? Did people just walk into other people's houses? Like, were there front doors?
Like, I assume if they didn't have doors, that if they were sort of that wealthy, you might at least have someone on the door. With a you know, like a porter or someone, you'd assume maybe, right? But
I mean, I went to Pompeii a few years ago, and I think a lot of the houses just had.
But they also
these big arches that you just walk in. But then also, what do I know?
And it's also been devastated by fire and time.
Yeah, time and fire and just all the things.
Yeah,
and it's pretty unrecognizable now. But I don't know. It is. It's a good question.
I think they did have someone on the door, because I think at one point when they announced the soothsayer bad guy, I can never remember anyone's names, even though I've seen this episode.
No,
like 10
I have to like write them down every time I mention them, otherwise I will forget. Because
it's something dextrous. It's,
Lucius is his first name.
Lucius,
yes, that's it.
Yeah.
Pextrus dextrous or something. And then Caecilius is the Peter Capaldi one. So yeah, I think at one point he gets announced. He's like, here to see you, is this man.
And isn't that guy the first one to get biffed by the pyro pile, isn't he? So
yes, you're well remembered, yes.
That thread's this is all true. Coming together.
Someone's been prepared. But no, I do think it's pretty good. And I know, the market bit always makes me laugh. Because again, sorry, bringing up more British actors, but the guy who they speak to, the main guy.
The Horrible Histories guy.
That. And he was in CBBC TV show called Stupid, where he played King Stupid.
Oh, yeah.
Iconic.
I know him as Dave Clifton from Alan Partridge stuff. That's my reference point. Sorry.
He was giving very Del Boy vibes, though, the way he was speaking. It was like a direct inspiration of Del Boy in that scene.
Well, I love how the TARDIS is supposed to be translating in their head, so we're hearing the translations. And because Donna's obviously very London, and yes, the 10th Doctor's also very like, hello, I'm the 10th Doctor, woo!
Yeah, yeah.
I like to, like, my sort in my head, I like to think that that's what they're hearing, because that's how they speak, that's what they're used to hearing. Mm.
Because the actor who I will look it up in a sec, his name escapes me, who plays Lucius, I always think of him because he's in like Quadrophenia. He's like a really Cockney actor, prop from the East End. So like everybody's really Cockney in this. It's quite good.
Didn't he also play
the cabbie from Sherlock?
Sherlock. Yes, that's Crystal. You took the words out of my mouth because I was literally about to say at the end of any time I see this man, I just think of him going Moriarty. That's it. That's what I remember.
His name is Phil Davis, apparently, according to the internet.
Lovely Phil. But no, it just makes me think of that episode of Sherlock and him lying on the floor being shot. Oh, sorry, spoilers for Sherlock. Sherlock podcast. So there you go. But that's what it reminds me of. I just, honestly, what a cast. Honestly, it's amazing. It's amazing. And the amount of characters in this, you know, there's so many characters. I forgot how many characters there were.
Yeah, it's very ensemble, but everybody's doing their bit, you know. Everybody's quite well realised and well written. I mean,
yeah, I would say I think everyone's sort of fleshed out, apart from like the girls. I feel like the sort of ensemble of soothsayers, and I think they know that, because I think there's this point where the 10th Doctor goes to see the High Priestess and is able to get the pyrovile, the sort of entity inside her, to like come out.
Yeah.
And he says, I'm a pyrovile. Yeah. And then it cuts to the girls and they're like rocking and they're like pyrovile.
Yeah. Yeah, literally.
And you sort of, I think on the director's part, I think this is intentional. Like I think they know that the girls aren't really like very fleshed out, and they're just there to sort of follow along and chant along. It's very knowing.
Yeah, but things I always wish, because I maybe I'll bring it up later in an unrelated segment, but I think the sort of, for me, the adult, the fully grown pyroviles kind of detract from quite a sort of mature episode, and I think maybe having the Sibylline sisterhood and the Reverend Mother still have her turn into a pyrovile, because I think that's an interesting thread and her design's really cool, but I think maybe making the group of soothsayers the antagonist would, for me, make it a bit more interesting, and then you can also flesh those parts out. But I know they've got toys to sell.
They just don't do a lot. They sort of just go, a new prophecy, there's a new prophecy, and then what else did they do? Like, there's a new prophecy, and then what else did they do? They look after the sisterhood.
Yeah.
Wait, they look after the lady.
Yeah, they kidnap Donna,
the High Priestess. Kidnapped Donna. So they do bits and pieces, don't they?
They always remind me of what's the series 5? Is it the 2-parter with Matt Smith? With is it vampires in Venice?
No, it's just one episode.
One episode. But it's a very similar thing, like young ladies kidnapping people on the street, and they're all a big secret cult.
This is true. Oh, there you go. Oh, I didn't even think about that, actually. That's actually
I think I get them confused in my head, especially because Karen Gillan's in this, so it all just kind of blends together in one kind of culty, you know, thing in my head.
I mean, I love cults being explored anyway. I mean, they're not called a cult. You know, they're a sisterhood, but they are a cult in a way, and I always love that. I love when people explore those kind of storylines and like those kind of like themes within things, because it's dark, man.
But I think they could do just, maybe a bit more fleshing out, especially because Lucius is... He's also a soothsayer, but doesn't believe that women can be soothsayers.
Yeah.
And I feel like there could just be a really interesting... That could be, you know... It's funny as it is, and it's enjoyable, but like I feel like you could probably actually do some good exploration. But again, we've got pyrovial toys to sell, so that's fine.
Yes. With random Roman soldiers packaged along that make no sense, but yes. That was so random.
That is random.
I still kind of want a pyro. I want a pyrovial toy, though.
I have one. Do you feel... are you jealous?
You have everything. You've got a 14th Dr. Sonic screwdriver.
I do.
You've got everything.
Oh, well done.
Yeah, I sat on the website refreshing for like an hour because I am sad. I'm nothing if not sad.
It's early September, so it's time for me to go out weekly and try and hunt down B&M things.
Oh, yeah, I mean, you don't have to, Crystal, because you've got them.
Oh, no.
So you know what? Link in the show notes for that review. Yeah. Link in the show notes.
I do have a couple of comments on my most recent video being like, how have you managed to get them? And I was like, what? They were sent to me to that box.
As they should. Yeah. As they should. Jealous people have no place here. No, as you should. You deserve it. But no, link in the show notes for that video if you want to watch it. Genuinely, we will link it. But yeah, so I want to talk about something. So Crystal, something we, Elliot and I, have spoken about on the show many a time is, especially in series two with Rose, she loves, as we're doing now, a hot girl chat. Rose loves a hot girl chat. Loves pulling across a side character, you know, usually a female, and just has a little heart to heart. And Donna does that. And I feel like she's learned from the school of Tyler. It was perfect. It was perfect.
It's really cute, isn't it? Like,
it's really cute.
She's like, oh, so what do the young girls do? Do you go to TK Maxx? No, TK Maximus.
TK Maximus, yeah.
But I also do think that that's quite a typical Doctor Who thing. It's like, it's quite old fashioned. Like, the men go off. The men, you know, David Tennant's, I think, uncovering the weird marble plaques or something.
Yes,
He's off with Peter Capaldi's character talking about men's things like marble plaques.
Yeah.
And then Donna's just like trying on frocks with the girl and talking about girly things and having like a little girly time. I don't know. It's quite cute.
Yeah. I think it's always that stuff that interests us most, which is probably very telling about how we watch these episodes.
But I do really like, so Evelina, who is the girl that Donna speaks to, I think, so her name is the actress, I have it written down because I am prepared for this, Francesca Fowler, who plays Evelina. I thought she was really good in this episode, like especially the part where she's atting the doctor like, I know who you are, bitch. I know who you are.
Yeah.
Don't at me.
Yeah.
And she's kind of like half tearing up and just like,
it's very intense.
Mm. It's very cool. I really like it. I thought she was really good in this, actually. I really liked her.
Yeah.
And it's a difficult thing to pull off as well, right? Because they're meant to be quite young, aren't they? They're meant to be sort of 16-ish, those kids. So you've got to have that kind of ignorant kind of innocence, but also quite an intense and quite scary. I think she is probably the scariest part of the episode.
Oh, yeah.
Not in a mean way. She's just sad and intense. Intense is a bit of a word.
No, she is sad and intense.
Yeah.
And I really like there you go. But I just really like her because you don't know whether to trust her or not.
You don't know what's going to happen to her, really.
Exactly.
And it doesn't seem like she's able to control this, like, power that she has. And so you just think at any point she could turn on everyone, so... It's very unsettling.
Yeah. The episode does tension quite well because you have that, and then you also have the tension pretty much straight away between the Doctor and Donna, where they're at loggerheads. They're arguing because she wants
the moment they realise it's Pompeii and it's Volcano Day.
It's great. It's so good.
Roll titles.
It's amazing. I mean, we've said we need to get a segment of Elliot. What were we going to call it? Tenantisms, or the way he says certain words.
Yeah, probably, because we do just say words now, don't we? Satsuma.
Yeah, like last week's episode when he said cat flap. The way he said cat flap was very pleasing.
Yeah, he's got a good voice.
Love that man.
Instead of just saying Barcelona, it's like Barcelona.
Yeah.
It's just very affected, isn't it? It's like everything's quite, it's emphasis on everything. Oh, yes.
Yeah. Every time.
It's good.
Every time.
But my yeah, I feel like he can sort of be like, obviously there's people out there who can do an amazing impressions, and I always reduce David Tennant down to you may have seen my 10th Doctor Rampage on
VIP
fans, but like it is basically oh yes and well and lots of heavy breathing through your teeth, like I'm the only one left. I'm the only one left, yeah. And just very like just sort of yeah, heavily just sort of like just lots of cockney, even though he's not really that
it's
cockney.
A lot.
Because we were saying last week, like when we did Partners in Crime, how impressive it is how even miming, I can just hear everything in his voice because it's so, he's even able to enunciate his mimes in such an odd way. It's great. What a cool.
Like, run. You just hear the run. It's not run. It's run. Yeah.
Run.
What I like, and, you know, Crystal, you mentioned it at the start. It's, again, Time Lord Victorious is coming. It's on its way. It's approaching fast. And
there's
but
a
then
sense
also
of foreboding.
Exactly.
I may say.
But then there's also that wonderful comedy coming in again. You know, the water pistol. Amazing. It's amazing. And, you know, I made a note of this. Like, David and Catherine in this episode, again, are on top form. Like, they're obviously incredible actors, as we know. But in this episode, I feel like they've just, you know, they called cut and they heard the word I'm not going to say because I don't want to bleep it out, but you know what I mean, that's what they heard, and they gave it, you know, especially Catherine at the end. I mean, geez, every time I watch this episode, that bit always never fails to make me just like
my throat just feels watched a bit, it again, know? In preparation for this podcast, and I feel like I've seen series 4, I've seen it multiple times, I've seen that episode multiple times, but every time I watch it, that bit still like almost makes me tear up.
Yeah, it's
same. And I also think, I remember back then when they announced Catherine Tate, obviously everyone knew her from the Catherine Tate Show. She was known as a comedy person. And she is just acting her socks off.
Yeah.
And it's that point where you're like, okay, she can act. Because Partners in Crime was quite lighthearted.
Yeah.
And then this is like, and obviously Christmas Invasion, no, sorry, not Christmas Invasion.
Runaway Bride.
What's it called? Runaway Bride is very lighthearted as well. And this is sort of the first time you really see her kind of upset, actually, rather than like laughing and joking all the time. So yeah, it's amazing. And then we continue getting that sort of range, you know, because in the Ood episode, Planet of the Ood. Mm-hmm. She's very, very, she's very upset by the song.
Yeah.
You know, when she meets the servants, the Ood who haven't been processed, and
she, and
the doctor lets, you know, does the telepathy and lets her hear the song. She's just like really,
yeah.
And it's nice as well there's Catherine Tate and her amazing acting and that sort of range, but there's also the journey her character goes on. She begins her journey as someone who's, you know, quite she answers back a lot, she's really got mouth on her, you know. She's always funny, and you start to see more of a real side, and it really changes her, and that's what makes it at the end, what happens at the end, that's what makes it so heartbreaking, because all of this character development is wiped. And it's like, when Wilf says, you know, she was better with you, like, because they even recognize that she had changed so much.
Yeah.
From her experience. And it's just absolutely crushing to let all that go.
Honestly, usually in this moment I would have said save it, but I didn't want to cut you off because you made some amazing points there. No, honestly, you're so right. Like, watching Catherine in this, I mean, we mentioned it last week, didn't we, Elliot, about how when she was cast there was just this uproar of like, no, she's not, no, we can't have her, she can only do funny. And it's like she basically went, well, shove that up your ass. You know what I mean? Like, yeah.
It's like the second time that Russell T Davis has done that as well, right? Because the same thing happened with Billy Piper.
Yeah.
But like, she's a pop star, she's not an actor, and then she's, you know, I mean, she's able to give Chris Eccleston a run for his money in terms of acting ability in series one. It's good. Amazing. I like it when that happens. And I can't believe we're getting to, you know, all of that was very sad. I mean, I feel quite sad about what happens to Donna. We're going to get 3 follow-up episodes to find out in like 2 months.
Oh my God, don't. Don't!
Just a little bit of excitement for everybody.
So exciting.
September, it's so 2 months away.
I know we're not talking about, we're not supposed to be talking about the 60th episode. We're supposed to be talking about the fires.
Honestly, it's fine. It's fine. Like, Daniel's allowed to, she can boss me around, but you get caught.
I feel like, obviously, Doctor Who's loved by a lot of people, and obviously the 60th is something that, you know, it's a big celebration for everyone. But I feel like David Tennant fans, particularly like myself, and Series 4 fans particularly, are going to be so spoiled. And I feel really like, it's almost like slightly guilty, because obviously I know that everything that's going to be in the specials is going to be geared towards people like me. I know that there's, and hopefully there will be treats in there for like fans in general, like maybe there's going to be some stuff in there that they haven't hinted towards yet.
Yeah.
Who knows? I mean, you know, who knows if there's other people who are going to appear in it, or if there's, you know, I don't know.
Absolutely.
Because for a 60th, you would have thought that there would be some more nods to the past. So, but on the whole, I'm just so excited to see my fave, David Tennant, even though he's the 14th. He's going to be playing the 10th, isn't he?
Yeah.
You know, he's going to be playing the 10th.
Yeah, exactly.
You've got Donna. You've got that family. You've got Wilf, obviously, Bernard Cribbins, sadly no longer with us. Sylvia Noble, Jacqueline King, like, it's just and seeing her, you know, what's going on in her life and her family and her daughter as well. So yeah. I'm just like, I can't wait to see those characters again.
It's gonna be overwhelming. Yeah. It's gonna be very overwhelming.
It's gonna be epic.
I mean, our listeners know, like, we are RTD girlies through and through. Mm-hmm. We love the show in its entirety, you know, but RTD era is absolutely our bread and butter. It's our thing. It's what made us love the show. And I think what some haters online need to just get over is the fact that he is the one that brought it back. So by darn it, he's allowed to do what he wants to do in the 60s. Just let him have some. He's been away for a long time. Just let him do his thing. He knows what he's doing. And it's going to be an utter treat because we get stuff like this again. You know, we get to see more of these characters go a little bit deeper. You know, Moffat, we love you, babe. We love you, babe. Chris, Chibbies, we love you. But we just want a little bit more of this. Just a bit of this.
I think also, you know, in terms of doing a big celebration for Doctor Who.
Yes.
And bridging the gap between what's come before and obviously the new era. If you think about David Tennant's era, Doctor Who really was sort of in the mainstream.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Russell brought back Doctor Who and it was huge. And, you know, you had every Saturday night, it was something that most people were watching. Like, I feel like it's one of those things where when I have conversations with people now, oh, you like Doctor Who? Oh, I used to watch that. They'll say, oh,
yeah,
I watched that
with
David. Pretty much every time that happens, they'll say, I watched it when David Tennant was the Doctor. Or Christopher Eccleston, or Matt Smith sometimes, but usually it's David Tennant. And I think just because they want to do it, but I think also it is a good thing to do because it's going to get lapsed fans, hopefully, tuning in. I mean, I did a video on my Reels. It was a stupid little video, just me reacting to some of the promotional pictures, and for some reason it's managed to sort of go beyond the fan base. It's got over 300,000 views, and it's sort of got into the mainstream, and now I've got all these comments going, oh my God, I had no idea David Tennant was coming back. Oh my God.
Oh, wow.
Like, or oh my God, Doctor Who's still on? What? Doctor Who? What? Doctor Who's coming back? What?
Wow.
So it just goes to show that actually, like, the sort of public perception of it, as fans, we're in a bubble, but the public perception of it is it's this thing that used to be on TV.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Used to be really popular. Oh, I don't know. Lots of people are like, oh, what's happened to it? What's that? Is it still on? Is it, what's it? And so hopefully this will put it back on the map. to bridge that gap. But then obviously going to Shooty's era, we're going to see a real sort of gear shift.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're going to bring so basically this is the 60th, bring lapsed fans back on board.
Yep.
And then new era, Shooty, it's going to be all about getting new audiences, I think.
Absolutely.
I think they know what they're doing. I think it is like, it's not,
oh yeah,
you know, there's obviously they want to do it because it's going to be a laugh, but also there's strategy to it as well.
I also think as well, sometimes fans kind of fail to sort of take into account like just logistics of like actors having real lives. And I think like David Tennant feels very much like the sort of the Patrick Troughton of this era, where he will just come back for anything. He doesn't care. Like, whereas, you know, you're not going to, like, Christopher Eccleston, love him to death. You know, you're never going to get him on set ever filming Doctor Who again. You know, I think Peter Capaldi is just busy and doing things. You know, Matt Smith is busy and doing things. And obviously Jodie's just left. So it's just, you know, like, he's just the one who, David Tennant will just drop everything to do some Doctor Who because he loves it. So, you know, I feel like sometimes it's also just an issue of logistics, which is fine. But, you know. Just because we want everybody, you can't always get everybody.
We want the modern day Five Doctors. It would be so good. Like, that's yes. what we want secretly, yeah. isn't it?
With deleted scenes of Christopher Eccleston from something to fill in and a waxwork of him.
I imagine Yeah, I was going to say, like, you when they had the Fourth Doctor as the waxwork, yeah. obviously the waxwork in the modern era is going to be Christopher Eccleston. Yeah. Like.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Oh, yeah. I would pay to see that person.
Just like animate some like audio clips from his Big Finish adventures, I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, AI is whack these days. Do you know what I mean? So,
whack.
Who knows?
Anyway.
Whack. Hey. Love it. But I was going to say, Crystal, something you brought up, I think it's really interesting, is how, like, as fans, we are in this echo chamber a little bit. And in my personal life, weirdly, Shooty is bringing a lot of people in. Like, I have a friend, and he was saying to me, I've never seen an episode, literally not seen a single clip, which, one, rude, but two, get a life. he was like, I'm actually going to start watching him when he's in it, because I love him in Sex Education. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
Incredible.
It's really clever casting, actually, because if you think about the doctors we've had in the modern era, especially the most recent, so, you know, Jodie and Peter Capaldi,
yeah,
they're people who are slightly older, and they're not really on social media. They haven't really got that following. They certainly didn't bring a young following to the show when they joined. Jodie was in Broadchurch. Peter Capaldi, people knew him from the thick of it. I think that was a surprise to people when he was cast.
Yeah, it was.
As the Doctor. Whereas with this, I mean, if you're going to relaunch the show, which basically is what this is, it's sort of like, I mean, I feel like the show has a soft reboot every time there's a new showrunner, doesn't it? But this is a real big chance to put Doctor Who back on, you know, back into the sort of mainstream, really. And so it's really clever casting, because you've got young actor who is in a show that, you know, sex ed, everyone, you know, it's a streaming audience, isn't it? And the other thing is, he uses social media and he's really active on social media. And the other thing, I'm going to say this, he is absolutely gorgeous.
He's stunning.
Like, and I'm not being funny, like, we haven't really had like a pin-up doctor. Like, I think David Tennant was a bit like, he had that sort of nerdy, David Tennant and Matt Smith had that sort of nerdy Britishness, which the Americans love.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
All the Anglophiles, they love all that, that sort of nerdy, that nerdy look. And that was really big when Matt Smith was the doctor. Apparently, it met in Top Man, I think bow ties became like the...
They did, yeah.
Top selling. You know, so... That was back then. That was what people, you know, were going for. Whereas, you know, he's on the front of like Vogue, or like all these like magazines, like modeling. Like he's yeah. like, really ripped. He goes to the gym.
He is absolutely like... stunning. He is a gorgeous man. Honestly, though, I also think, you know, you make a really good point, because I think another thing he does is, obviously there's a massive, is what we talk about on the podcast all the time, the queer fan base that, you know,
yes,
as you know, and. A lot of the fandom, I would say, I mean, maybe I'm exaggerating it a tad. I would say, maybe, again, because I'm in an echo chamber, maybe 80% of the fandom to me is queer in some respect. And I think he also, especially with recent interviews he's done, and he actually recently publicly came out. I saw it on Gay Times Instagram. Yeah, he was like, yeah, I've come out as, yeah, yeah. He came out as queer. Properly for the first time, which is amazing, and the fact that he felt comfortable to do that is amazing. But I think what's really nice is that he basically I feel like he's coming out and going, if you don't want to get with it, tough, because I'm here, you know what I mean? It's yeah. lovely to see. I think it's really nice. I mean, Jodie kind of did that a little bit. I feel like her doctor really, you know, I mean, anytime she's at a convention, it's just lesbians, and it's wonderful. It's a wonderful thing to yeah. behold, truly. It's amazing. Yeah. But I think he really is coming in and saying, like, we're not, if you don't want to get with the times, it's quite frankly tough shit, because I'm here now and it's going to be iconic. And if you don't want to be here, then you're lost.
Yeah, I do think as well, Russell is also going into it with that attitude, and the casting for the upcoming series, you know, got someone from Drag Race and Yasmin Finney, and it's, and you know, Neil Patrick Harris. So you've got all of these like queer... icons. So I think it's yeah, I can't remember. Obviously, you know, Russell is a gay icon, queer icon.
Oh, yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
You know, he's gonna want to make sure that the show has that representation. And I think as well, since he last wrote for the show, I mean, back then you had obviously the Doctor kissing Jack in like 2005, which was a big deal. Really, I think back then, and you know, as a youngster seeing that, you know, it's a really good thing. And you know, obviously things have moved on a lot since then, and I just think it's really exciting, isn't it?
It's very exciting. We've spoken about it many times, especially when we did Parting of the Ways. We spoke about how so for me, Jack kissing Nine was my first ever same-sex kiss on screen I'd seen at that point. That was my first one, and I was like, oh my gosh. I mean, Russell is my queer awakening, like I've said this before. Yeah. So like
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like a lot of like Doctor Who was massive part of that, because he was brave enough to put that in, you know, the show at the time, because obviously back then it wasn't as common to see.
And that's the thing, though.
It's wonderful.
Like, with being online and echo chambers thing, right, is there are people who will say that having like Yasmin Finney as like one of the leads in 60th is like bare minimum stuff. But for the way the media talk about and the way the public conversation is held by politicians and the media about trans people at the moment, it's actually really brave and subversive, and is a big fuck you from them to do it, you know. Obviously in online sort of queer leftist spaces, it's like, well, you know, why wouldn't you? Because, you know, that's just a nice normal thing to do. But in terms of actually the show going back into the mainstream, it's an incredibly bold move, and it's a really cool thing to happen.
I love it. Queer joy, queer love. It's just a beautiful time to be a fan, I think. It makes me teary. It makes me teary in the best way.
Well, the other thing I always think when there's a new era of Doctor Who, because we've had many now in
yes.
New Who, as well as obviously classic, but in the time we've been fans, we've seen so many resets, so many relaunches. And I always think with every new Doctor and every new showrunner, there are all of these people out there, all of these potential fans who don't know it yet, they don't realize it yet, but the show is going to touch their lives in the same way it did us.
I love that. I love that.
And
so
I'm
much.
So excited. There are all these youngsters out there who don't know it yet, but Shooty is going to be their doctor.
Yeah.
And Russell and Shooty is going to change their lives.
Yeah. It's going to be so good.
I know. That gave me a chill then. Sorry, that actually gave me a chill when you said that. I was like, but no, it's so wonderful. It's a wonderful time. And it's a wonderfully queer time. And if you don't want to get along with it, like we said,
well, it's their loss.
Move on. Move on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fuck them. Fuck them. in layman's terms, fuck them.
Yeah, final words on that.
So anyway, back to the old episode that we were just talking about for a second. Something I want to bring up, which I find really interesting. It's kind of an obvious point. It's been pointed out in fandom for years, but the flashback kind of to the Time War, the kind of hint to the Time War, because obviously you see the moment where Ten makes the realization that he is he is behind Pompeii and the volcano erupting and everything. Well, him and Donna, because Donna makes, I just love this bit when Donna puts her hands on Ten's hands and is like, I'm going to do it with you.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really lovely. I love that kind of, at this point, the 50th hadn't come out, but it really reminded me of the scene in the 50th with, 10, 11, with the war doctor kind of helping him. I don't know. I just really loved that bit. I think there was just a lot of symbolism with that moment and just a lot to ponder about. I really loved it.
And I forgot that it happened.
Yeah, me too.
Well. Like, I know. I remember Pompeii being a fixed point in time, but I didn't remember that happening. And I was like, oh, that's good. Yeah. That's a nice moment. Chills when he realises it was good.
Yeah. And again, Catherine just giving us performance, giving us incredible, incredible performance.
Yeah. And
it just makes me want to cry again.
It sort of shows that the since the kind of reboot, that change in tone and everything else, because we love all the classics. But there's a couple of episodes where they like inadvertently cause like a world disaster, and it's just kind of like a fun little they start the Great Fire of London, and it's like a little fun little moment at the end of the episode. But I like it that this is a bit more serious. It's more grounded. Having to set off the volcano at Pompeii is not like a fun little cheeky time traveler story. It's serious. It's very serious.
But then how it kind of plays into, well, this is one of my favourite parts of the plot and the whole thing, is how the sisters can't, because, Donna and Ten are kind of hinting at like, tomorrow, big day. And they're like, what are you talking about? And then you realise it's because it wasn't going to happen until he turned up. And, it's all very clever. It's all very clever. It's all very, the word that we always use, timey-wimey, it's great. It's so great. But again, it's just, I think what makes it for me is, I just think Catherine Tate carries this episode on her back. I mean, has anyone checked in on this woman after carrying this episode on her back?
It's a lot of weight to be carrying around.
Yeah.
I just, Donna as a character in this episode is just one of my favourite Donna episodes, the Donna moments as well.
It's one of the things I really like about Russell's writing, particularly because Rose does this as well in the End of the World. It's that thing of, the companion is sort of, we're sort of seeing a situation through the companion's eyes. It's like they're carrying the episode It's the Doctor's world, but like we're accessing it via the role of the companion. So I think that's why they carry so much of the emotional weight, because at the end of the day, they're a person. And I think to have that, I think you need that, because realistically, meeting this person who's an alien, who can take you anywhere in time and space, that's huge. And like, I love how Rose reacts to it in the End of the World. She's just like, it completely blows her mind. And I think similarly with Donna, she really struggles with some of the stuff that happens, and that's really important. And I think
what got lost a bit later on, particularly with companions like Clara, is they just take it in their stride way too much. And they just enjoy it way too much. And I think Clara, it got to the point where Clara didn't really seem very affected by anything. She was so perfect and so, like, invincible. And
yes.
It lost its sort of sense of realism. And that's why I love it when, like, you know, Jackie ends up in the TARDIS. Because she's so believable as a character. And she's so unlikely. Like, it's like, what, like, it's just this mum, what's she doing in time and space? And there's nothing really particularly magical about her. She's just really normal. So I feel like to bring it back to this episode, I think what is done really well here is Donna's sort of the way that Donna reacts to everything feels very realistic, I think, anyway.
Because she feels like someone you could know. Yeah, that's what we always say. We've been asked about, you know, your ideal companion and things like that. We always say, honestly, just working class people from contemporary Earth, because it gives most people that hook into the show to see things through their experiences. And yeah, Donna feels like, it's the same thing why we love Jackie, right? She feels like someone you've known at some point through your life. She feels like everybody's mum.
I agree with that, yeah. And I think as well, what I really, really love about that kind of element of, especially this era of the show and within this episode, is the Doctor is learning. Like I said from the start, the Doctor is also learning from their companion. You know, I can't just be this closed off, you know, I'm a Time Lord, this is my job, this is the burden that I have to carry, but it doesn't mean that I can't try and just save people, because she's right, I can't just live my life like this anymore. And I just love that, like, you know, you can visibly see it, and again, because David is a stunning performer, you can just see in his face, slowly, he's just changing his mind.
Yeah.
Just his eyes. It's just in the eyes, really. You're just like, oh my God, he's literally going to go back and save the family. You can see it.
I think
just one eyebrow raise.
Yeah. It's why the Doctor likes to travel around with humans, really, because, you know, he's come from this background, which is obviously the Time Lord, and that sort of superiority, and he really doesn't want to be like that. And I remember this quote. I mean, it might be a Stephen Moffat quote. I can't remember where it originated, but I think it's him. He said, Sherlock, if you'll remember how Sherlock behaves, Sherlock is a human trying to be God, and the Doctor is like a god trying to be human.
Oh, I like that. I like that.
And that's sort of what differentiates those characters. But yeah, the Doctor is trying to not be like the Time Lord, because he hates them so much. Like, he's just like, no. And so I think sometimes he's really conflicted.
Yeah.
In how to behave.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, because you...
He's trying to do the right thing.
Yeah, you almost feel like he hates, like towards the start of the episode, I can't remember the exact phrasing, but Donna basically asks, you know, why he gets to make a decision. He has to sort of pull out the credentials of, you know, Time Lord TARDIS. I get to make the choices. But you almost, every time he says it, it just doesn't feel right. You get the sense that that's not, yeah, he doesn't want to have to sort of pull rank, essentially.
He hates it.
Yeah, I think as well, what I like, again, about how, you know, what we learn about the Doctor in this episode is, like, the decisions that the Doctor has to make. And again, I think we'd all be Donna in this episode. If we were in this episode, if we were a character in the show, we would all be, like, I would be a mess. I'd be like, I don't know what to do. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, we have to save someone. We have to do something. And I think... But then you also get the Doctor's perspective and you really understand it properly. Like, really, truly, you go, but this is like a hard decision, because honestly, just saving this family, I could be splitting a hole in the world. But again, it's like, he's just like,
he does take risks.
Yeah, he takes a massive risk
with that. Yeah.
And I think what's nice is that, like I said, I thought I just said it about three different times in the episode, but phrased it differently. But again, it's just like, I am the Doctor. This name, I gave myself this name for a reason. My job is to save people, and I don't care what the risk, I don't care what the outcome is anymore. It's you know, and it's actually quite a big thing, quite a big theme, and to bring into the series so early on, because we're only in episode 2 of series 4, and it's such a massive theme that it's been brought into it.
But then again, yeah, like we're talking about in Partners in Crime, where you have Rose is in Partners in Crime, which we always forget about. The bees are disappearing. There's another one. I can't remember what one the other. There's another setup in that one. But in...
Hang on. Pyrovilia has gone missing.
Pyrovilia.
In this episode.
It's the planets. It's all headed towards finale, really, because it's all the hints towards she is returning and there's something on your back.
Yeah. So that's what we love, because it doesn't feel like finale's just come out of nowhere. They're all building to a point. But I forgot how early on that something on your back is brought up.
So, like, I'm not being funny, right? But... The hints come, these little hints are like in every episode, right? If you think about like the Timeless Child, it's mentioned like once in series one, the first series, Jodie's first series, and it just like doesn't come back for ages. And then it's like, oh, do you remember the Timeless Child? Well, here she is. This is it. And everyone should care about this. Like,
yes.
And I'm like, no, I'm not intrigued. You haven't like, You haven't reeled me in. You need to keep giving me those little nuggets, those little like tasty little morsels, those little, you know, like little sprinkles of fish feed, you know. And you just say, that's tasty. Like you need these little hints.
I love foreshadowing. Foreshadowing is important. Yeah.
Like, some of it's, do you know what I mean? Like, some of it's so unsubtle, but it's so good and so rewarding. You know, series one is the build up to Bad Wolf and what that means. Series two is the build up to Torchwood mostly. Series three is all the Vote Saxon stuff and Yharna. And then this series, there's almost too many to count. And even in the specials, you get the four Knocks. Like, each one has its own defined mystery that it's building to, and they all feel like satisfying payoffs. Which is genius.
I think though. You just can't beat a Dutch angle of someone zooming in slowly, being like, "She is returning," and it's like, "Yeah, I love it." It's like,
even though we know what that means, it's still, I don't know, it felt creepier than just seeing Rose last episode. I was like, "Oh my god."
Yeah, but then also later on, I'm gonna say this and then save it, but in Midnight with Rose on the screen, it's like,
"What?" I remember when I saw that.
Yeah,
I saw her face appear on the screen. I think I was watching it on my own as well. I had nobody to turn to be like, "Oh my god, did you see it? Did you see it?" Like, nobody to discuss it with. So exciting!
It's you know, gorgeous.
We're probably going to get this again, though. Right?
I know,
because it's his style of doing things.
And that's the thing. I don't know if it's because we grew up with it. So it's like how I like my drama to be written, but we do often just descend into just being like, Russell's so good, isn't he? He's so clever. He's so good at writing.
We call him Father a lot in this. Just Father.
Yeah. I love it.
He's a mate, yeah. He is a mate.
Father Russell.
Honestly, that man is just mad genius, mad, wonderful, beautiful genius.
He's just a fantastic writer, really. And I think also, since he was last on Doctor Who, he's done so much amazing stuff since. You know, Years and Years, It's a Sin, Cucumber Banana, And you know, lots of other projects as well. So his writing has, you know, seems he's done a lot since, you know, and yeah.
And do you know what? It's really interesting. A lot of people that I follow just casually online are like seeing him out in the wild a lot recently. I don't know what. Maybe Russell's doing a lot of social things. I don't know. But what I really like is that I think now I hope he's understanding how much he's affected all of our lives. Like, you've done some good, dude. You've done some real good and you've really influenced our lives, you know. It's really nice.
He's my
to
most
see.
Conflicted, would love to meet, because I'm sure he's lovely, and also, you know, it's such a big inspiration, but also could not approach, because I'd be like, it's too intense. If I'm like, thank you for making me the human being I am today, that's quite a lot to take on if you're just walking down the street.
Yeah, can't do it.
But, you know.
Will not do it, can't do it.
I find interactions with celebs at conventions really weird, because, so I met David Tennant at Collectomania. So the organisers, we used to organise LFCC, Collectomania isn't really a thing anymore. I think it was in 2010, maybe 2011. And I paid, to be honest, back then this was a bargain. I think I paid about £40 to get his autograph.
Oh, wow.
So obviously it's hundreds of pounds now.
Yeah.
That was a lot of money for me back then. I was a student, and but I was obviously so excited. This is the only time I've ever met David Tennant. And I was dressed up in my spacesuit outfit. And
amazing.
I walked up, you know, it was my turn to go. And I walked up, and I said, you know, he goes, oh, I like your, because I like my outfit.
Yeah.
And I was like, thanks. I like, and then the picture.
Yeah.
And our interaction lasted about 30 seconds.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just find that so weird.
It's strange.
Brush with someone who means so much to you, but you're not, you don't really have that chance to really, like, connect. It's like, because they're obviously seeing, like, hundreds of people. Like, if you say, I know that, like, if I had spent more time and just, like, said how much he, you know, his doctor means to me, so he's hearing that every single person say that, I'm sure. And I'm just like, I don't know. I always feel a bit sort of shy about it. Does that make sense? Like, it's so weird though, because for you, I mean, for me back then, it was a huge moment meeting, you know, their tenant. You know, I felt like, I don't know, I was so full of adrenaline. I was so, like, I was too. A bit too scared to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And for him, he's on the other end of the table, and every single person in that queue is feeling the same. And he's one person at the end of the table. He's turned up. He's an actor, right? He's like going to a convention, getting paid to go to a convention is part of, you know, it's a gig, and he's be like, oh, gonna be lots of fans today. That's nice, you know. He's probably pretty chill. He's probably like, oh, thanks. Like, he's getting all these compliments. Oh, thanks. And then every single person who's coming out, he's getting the other side of that table, the emotion is like, there's a sort of like imbalance. Like there's all these like people coming up to him shaking, and I'm always shaking, like, you know, like,
yeah.
And it must be really intense. I'm sure I was probably quite intense.
I've never been to a con, so it's our big objective is to get me down to,
oh, well, amazing,
you know. Oh,
yeah.
I'll tell you who's really amazing at conventions.
Yeah.
Paul McGann.
Mm.
I love that man. I want to meet him.
Angel.
Every interaction
he's a real
I see
angel.
From meeting Paul McGann, he really has the time for everybody.
He takes his time. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah, like, I think
really
for
does.
You, Elliot,
yeah.
Colin Baker's a big one. We've got to get you to meet Colin.
Yeah. So first, I want to meet Sylvester McCoy, Colin Baker, Peter Davison, Paul McGann.
They're a lot easier to, I think those particular Colin, Sylvester McCoy, and Peter Davison are much easier to have lengthy interactions with, obviously, because they're like, they do a lot more stuff. They do a lot of conventions, and there's a lot of cons they do. I've been to conventions where they've just been hanging out in the bar.
Oh,
or like Sylvester McCoy, I think it might have been Big Finish Day or something, and he was sitting in the bar having his like little chip of tea on his own.
I love that man.
And,
I love that man.
They're just about, and sometimes you're able to just, you know,
yeah.
Them. And like, I remember, I mean, obviously it's like Dr. Sophie Aldred, like,
yeah.
Was at a Big Finish Day, and I had really long kept with her, and they don't really hold me up the queue because like everyone's quite chill, and
that's nice.
So I only like smaller conventions.
Yeah. That's the thing, I think, if we went to one, it'd have to be a slightly smaller one.
Yeah. It's just a lot. The other ones are a lot, I'm not going to lie. But like, Crystal, I can't imagine how you felt in a professional capacity when you had to interview Peter, for example.
Oh, don't. Well, I think it's pretty evident in that video where I'm barely able to speak.
Oh, you can't tell. No, honestly, I'm not just saying that
really?
You can't. You really can't.
If I did that interview now, I think I probably would come across a lot more confident. But I remember how it felt. I remember being so nervous. And obviously, yeah, like you said, having to do this, having to do a professional job, also like not fangirling too much. But he made it feel very easy, because I was absolutely breaking it. I don't think I've ever been more nervous. Like, my heart was beating so fast.
You can't tell. You can't tell. Honestly,
really,
you can't tell. Yeah, you can't tell.
Because it was the first sort of big interview that I did. But yeah, he made every aspect of that like so easy. And he was so willing to answer the questions. And I think you probably could see I was like fangirling a bit.
I mean, you know, he's just one of those. I feel like Peter Capaldi is a very cozy person. He comes off very cozy. I don't know.
Cozy, yeah.
And is also a massive Doctor Who nerd as well. I feel like he's gone through that in his youth as well. Yeah, he's experienced being just a massive Doctor Who nerd. So maybe he's a bit more sort of understanding of the excitement.
Yeah.
I think the more that I sort of did interviews, obviously I interviewed Peter Capaldi about 3 times. I think about 3 times. Can't remember. But met him a few more times outside of that as well. And every time I met him, I got more comfortable like in his presence. And I think towards the end, I think my last year of doing fan show, I did a sit down with Russell, and I'd actually met Russell at a convention. Well, it was a queer event.
Oh yeah,
an LGBT event. So I'd met him a couple of times before, once or twice, and then did the interview with him. And I think by that point, I think I'd gained a lot more confidence as an interviewer. And even though I was still like really bricking it, I remember feeling like much more able to like control my nerves and stuff. And I think towards the end, I think I was able to kind of like suppress stuff a bit more. but honestly, if I got to interview David Tennant, I don't think I would be able to cope.
So speaking of Peter Capaldi, like you did just a second ago, I mean, look, the man, the myth, the legend, he's really good in this. I think he's a massive standout in this. I think he's wonderful in this episode. And I feel like the scene at the end when the Doctor comes to save... How do you say his character name? For God's sake, I'm terrible. Is it...
Caecilius?
Caecilius.
Let's say that, Caecilius. When he comes back to save them, and he reaches for his hand, that scene just has a whole different meaning now. Whole different meaning. And it's so cool.
Even before just that, like, even before I think it had all this sort of other meaning to it, just the way that's shot with the light coming out of the TARDIS and that low angle and the ash falling on them, like Peter Capaldi's face, just the way he sells that moment of looking sort of a combination of distraught and also relieved it's a really beautiful moment.
It's lovely.
Yeah.
Like, and when they're on the hill as well, and you can just see that their hope in the gods, as it were, is just completely shattered. But they have a new pair of gods to look up to, and what an amazing, amazing pair of gods they are. Honestly, I would thank them every day and make a stone slab if I could.
I do like I think it was probably quite a good stroke by James Moran, the writer, that they're just a normal family. Like they feel like a contemporary Earth family, like right at the end when you're having the little wrap up, and you know, is it Evelina, isn't it, is the daughter, and she's going out, and yeah, Peter Capaldi's like, you're not going out dressed like that. It's just makes it a bit more fun.
It's what all the girls are wearing in Rome these days. It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love
it's
it.
Brilliant.
Yeah, so they feel like a proper little family.
I just feel like there's just all these lovely nuggets now that at the time they didn't even know they were doing them, and now when you look back, it's like, wow, they didn't even know that these little moments mean so much more, like it almost how many years later. It's really cool.
It has what me and Dan called the gridlock effect, where for me, I go through the list of episodes and I go, I don't need to watch Fires of Pompeii, and then I watch it for some reason, either I'm doing a whole rewatch or we're doing this, and I go, this is really good. Why don't I watch this?
It's really good.
Yeah, why don't I ever actually watch this? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very fun.
So yeah, no, I had a lot of fun. It's a good episode.
Okay, so we're at the wrap-up, where we talk about our standout moment, what didn't work, our most doctory moment, and our favourite quote. Crystal, I'm going to head to you first because you are our guest today. So, standout moment from Fires of Pompeii.
So, for me, I think I have to say the standout moment has to be where it's the whole sequence where the volcano has exploded and they're running through the market and there's that child crying and Donna is in despair. And it's so... She's so helpless, you know, she knows all these people are going to die. She's desperate. She's really trying to get the Doctor to save someone. And then so from that point up until the interaction in the TARDIS where she, please just save someone, and he's like, I can't. For me, that's a standout moment for that episode. Not even the decision, not even the decision bit where they press it. It's after. It's that, like, that bit where she asks and begs him to save somebody.
Yeah, nice one. Elliot, what about you?
I think we did touch on it briefly. It's the moment where Lucius and Evelina are both kind of trying to out-soothsay each other about who the Doctor is. Because it's weird enough when Evelina comes in and then when Lucius joins in and says and calls him, like, the man from Gallifrey, and it just all gets really dark all of a sudden. You've got all the canted angles of David, and there's all the red lighting coming up from the steam vent. It is a great moment. I loved it.
That is pretty cool. Yeah, intense. I like that.
Dana, what's your standout moment?
Mine is just after yours, Crystal, when Donna's begging the Doctor to save someone. Just that in little tiny interaction, that moment where she's like, just save someone, please, please. And it's like, my heart is breaking.
It's a look of desperation on her face.
It's mad. Isn't it? It's amazing. So going from positive to more of a negative, what didn't work for you in this episode, Crystal?
I wrote some notes.
Oh, yeah.
Well, there's just a couple of odd bits that didn't really make sense to me. So, like, the bit where Donna's kidnapped, the Doctor just turns up without any explanation as to how he got there, like how he found it. Like, he's just like, oh, fuck, here I am. Like, here I am.
I thought I'd missed a bit of the episode. Like, I checked my phone and, like, someone had told him something. But no, I think he does just turn up. Yeah, I thought I was missing. Like, I sort of blacked out for a second. Yeah.
I think because they only had 45 minutes, yeah. I think they're just like,
because
like,
sure, like, doesn't Evelina see them? So even just like a quick line to her, like a quick exchange would just explain it away.
Yeah, but, yeah. Even the shot, I just don't know how he found it, like how he knew they were there. No,
I do love it with things like that.
God knows.
There was one more bit as well where Lucius Dextrous has his arm ripped off and he doesn't really seem to care very much. And
he's like,
I just
there you go.
Yeah, whereas obviously the High Priestess, like she says to the Doctor that she's in a lot of pain, but like it's something that she needs to go through. And so like the way she is with that condition, like turning into stone, seems like she's really affected by it, whereas like his, like he doesn't really seem very much in pain, and then his arm gets ripped off and then he's like, oh well, that's irreversible. But
yeah,
sure,
so if you're like ever trying to rip stone with your bare hands, it's hard. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What didn't work for you, Elliot?
I did already mention this because, you know, I can't stay original, but I just think, yeah, the grown-up sort of pyroviles just sort of don't really add much. I like the design. I like they just look like centurions, but, you know, they're just sort of the Doctor Who's got to have a villain and a big monster, but they just feel a little, if you'll pardon the pun, underbaked.
No, I think I agree with that. Mine was as much as some of the outdoor sets are really good, I think the indoor ones are a little bit like, okay, the house is okay, it's mainly the house. The house doesn't do it for me. It's not my favourite set. It just cheapens the look of the episode for me. I don't know.
Things haven't improved since William Hartnell's The Romans.
It's a bit classic Doctor Who, that set, isn't it?
It does. Yeah, so it does look like the set that they're on for The Romans. Like,
yeah, it's like a theatre set. Yeah.
It is. No, it's very that.
Yeah.
But what is, Crystal, your most doctory moment? What do you think is the moment where the Doctor was doctoring the most?
The Doctor was probably doctoring the most when he whipped out the yellow water pistol.
Bang on the money.
Like, yeah. I just think mad props is such a doctory thing to do. Mad props. Agreed. In like inappropriate settings. Yeah. Just, yeah.
The 3D glasses of the series.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Elliot, what's yours?
I mean, I had exactly the same moment because there's lots of good doctoring, but when I think of especially David Tennant as the Doctor fighting aliens with a water pistol, that's my guy.
Mine is slightly different. Mine was realizing that listening to Donna is always the best thing to do, learning that actually everything she says is correct and that she should be in charge. That's what I think is the most doctory moment, that realization. But last one then, Favourite quote from the episode, Crystal? What's your favourite quote?
I think there's quotes, there's like quotes that definitely stick in my head from this, like, you know, we're in Pompeii and it's volcano day. Like, it's always, yeah, that's the first thing that always comes to my mind when I think about this episode.
I was able to anticipate Peter Capaldi's modern art, because I hear that a lot all the time. Like,
I think some of the poetry is really good.
To be fair, the back and forth between the Doctor and Lucius, where they're always doing, you know, like, oh, the seed that blows on the wind does this, and it's like, oh, you know. But, yeah, oh, I concede the sun must set in the shade, but also it rises by the father.
I do like all the Spartacus stuff, like, I am Spartacus, and so am I.
No, that was good. I like that. You can have that if you want. That can be your answer.
Well, there we go.
There you go. I'm Spartacus, and I'm also Spartacus. It's pretty good.
It is good.
It's pretty good.
It's just funny.
It's very funny. But Elliot, what's yours?
I do struggle between two. There's lots of good Donna moments in this. And both of them are jokes, weirdly. It's either Donna saying, don't get clever with me in Latin, because just the structure of that is just mad. Or actually, it's relevant to one of the moments that didn't work for Crystal, which is after they rip Lucius's arm off, and then they go, he's made of stone. And then the Doctor says, but he's armless enough.
Nice
classic,
one.
Classic pantomime comedy. But it did get a good chuckle out of me. What's your favourite quote?
So mine is a serious one because I'm basic. It's when Donna is saying, you know, talking about how you saved me in 2008, you saved us all, why is this so different? And he says, that's how I see the universe. Every waking second, I can see what it is, what was, and what could be, what must not. That's the burden of a Time Lord, Donna, and I'm the only one left.
I'm the only one left.
It's giving dialogue. It's very fun. It's very fun. But that leads me to the last final question before we say goodbye. Out of five, what are we giving this episode? Fires of Pompeii. Crystal, what are you giving it out of five?
I'm going to give it a 3.
Ooh, a 3. Nice.
I feel like because it's not terrible. It's not, yeah. It's, you know, certainly an episode I would watch again and have enjoyed watching again. But I do feel like there's episodes that would take 4 and 5 more than this one. It's a middling episode. It's not the most amazing thing ever, but it's, you know, it's a good laugh.
Yeah.
I really like it.
Nice.
3. Let's go for 3.
Elliot, what about you?
I did go back and forth between two numbers, but I landed on a 3.
Oh, snap.
Yeah, because it's good. It's good. But there's just a couple moments where it loses me, maybe ever so slightly. But it's better than I remember it being, but it's still not, like you say, still not like top tier.
I'd say for me, because I'm now going to look like a negative Nancy, which is fun. I'm giving it bang half marks, 2.5 out of 5. Halfway. I know. But that's my truth. That's my truth. It's good, but it could be great. And it's just not quite hitting it for me, unfortunately. Don't hate me. But there you go.
Well, that brings the curtains down on another wonderful episode of the Come Along Pond podcast. I hope you had fun. We sure did. If you like what you heard and you want to support the show, you can do so by going to Patreon, patreon.com/comealongpondpodcast. Oh my God, we got so many tiers, brand new tiers. We have the bestie, we have for me, for you, we have serving, .. You can figure the rest of that out for yourself. And we have the companion tier. That is your one-stop shop for ad-free listening and other little cute benefits. patreon.com/comealongpondpodcast. Thank you to everybody so far who supports us on Patreon. We really appreciate it. Patreon, not your bag. You don't want to give us continuing amounts of money, head over to Ko-fi, ko-fi.com/comealongpondpodcast. That's ko-fi.com/comealongpondpodcast. You can give us the price of a cup of coffee. One for me, one for Dowler, one for both of us, if you like both of us in equal measures. That's absolutely fine. All of those links are in our show notes and on our social media, so you can't miss them. Social medias, you might say. I didn't know you had social medias. Well, we do. We've got a bloody TikTok. TikTok.com/comealongpondpodcast. Over there, we post fun little vignettes, hot girl chats, cheeky little momos. I know you know it because that's how you've come here. Bring more people here. There's more of you. Where are you? You're hiding in the shadows. I don't like it. Anyway, get involved. But if you don't know it, check it out. TikTok.com/comealongpondpodcast. However, your two main avenues. If you want to be some cool, funky, fresh people, just like Jemima, like Calvin, and like Jack and Faith, our first ever couple emailers. You can email the show, comealongponpod@gmail.com. Questions, anything you want to ask, we will endeavour to read it out. We are slowly making our way back through a backlog. If you're thinking, I emailed in and it's not been read out yet, it's probably just long and I need to make some edits to it, which is fine. You email in as much as you want. It just means it might take me more time to get to it. I do mostly select them at random, though, so don't feel bad. However, your main avenue, big street, one-stop shop, numero uno. Oh, baby, it's Instagram. Instagram.com/comealongponpodcast. We've got so many things. We got reels. We got stories. We got polls. We got posts. If you want to get the latest updates, opinions, facts, everything about Cap, Instagram.com/comealongponpodcast. You can't miss the same artwork everywhere. Send us a DM. Give us a follow. We're hurtling towards 3K followers. You could be the third K. And for that, you get nothing except for our undying love. But you already have that anyway.
But that's been Fires of Pompeii. Crystal, as always, and I've said it, what, 15 times? Is that the count? Thank you so much for joining us here at Cap.
Honestly, thank you so much, Crystal. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. We've had so much fun and we really appreciate you coming on and talking about this episode. Honestly, it's been an honour, a privilege. Iconic, shall I say. Iconic.
Oh, thank you for having me. Honestly, I've had so much fun.
You're welcome back anytime. Anytime.
And something we always do is we give people air from our lungs. Would you like to help us give people air from your lungs? Which is just breathing into your microphone, basically.
So we give you air from our lungs. Bye, guys.
Bye. Thank you again, Crystal.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Chat soon. Cheers. Bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.